This is American Real.
I am Roger Brooks. Welcome to the show.
This is American Real TV.
There's so much to talk to you about.
Where everyone...
You are a true inspiration.
...has...
We're all trying to do our part to change the world.
...a story.
What's your mission? What do you want your legacy to be? You have such a great story. I cannot wait to share it.
Welcome to the American Real family.
I cannot wait to air this episode.
And now, here's your host, Roger Brooks.
Writing a book is a tremendous personal accomplishment. It's often talked about in the same light as preparing for and running a marathon, or even earning a specialized degree. The odds of those who say they will write a book versus those who actually get it written and then published are staggering. Something like 99% of the people fail. But when you add additional layers of complexity into the equation, the odds of achieving this goal become even slimmer. Today, I welcome best-selling author Juan Diaz, who will be talking about his new book, but more importantly, how he accomplished his goal. He holds a bachelor's and master's degree in the field of psychology from Wilmington University, and we'll also talk about his future endeavors. Juan, thank you for coming on. Appreciate you being here with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mr. Brooks. Pleasure, you know.
Thanks so much. And I'm just going to hold up your book. It's called Little Bits of Blue, a collection of poems. Wow, what a great accomplishment. This became a number one Amazon bestseller, as people could see. So how are you feeling about this, Juan, now that you have the book published and that it's out there to the public?
It feels absolutely wonderful. You know, it's been a dream come true of mine, you know, to be a best-selling author, but mainly it's a dream come true to reach people from all over the world. You know, I've been a bestseller in the UK, believe it or not, India, you know, places I've never been to, you know, which is a dream come true.
Yeah, and it's just wonderful. And that's what's great about just the reach of, say, Amazon today, is that readers are worldwide. So now, you know, as opposed to say 20, 30 years ago, it's become a lot easier to get the book out, you know, digitally, as well as with all the improvements in shipping and printing, you know, it becomes more accessible for those around the world. So congratulations to you on getting that done. I would love to walk through your process in, number one, how you know, the initial idea of that you had that you wanted to write a book. And then, as I mentioned in the opening, the stats are staggering. You know, 99% of people that set out to write a book never complete it. They don't get it done. So tell us about your determination and will to make it happen.
Well, my determination and will to make it happen started when I was 11. I couldn't read, and I taught myself how to read. So what happened was I knew the phonics of the letters, you know, and I picked up a book. It was The Long Walk by Stephen King. And I started reading that out loud. It took me months. And it was like going to the gym every single day. It was like that, you know, but it was worth it. It took me like 5 months to read that book. And that is literally a 160-page book, which nowadays I could read in like one sitting.
That's amazing. So your determination to not only read the book itself, but to teach yourself how to read. Now give us a little bit more background. So obviously, we're going to talk about how you actually did it physically, but maybe you could touch on your personal disability and what it is and how that impacted, you know, your initial growth as a child.
Well, I have cerebral palsy, which has left me wheelchair bound, and you know, during my childhood, it was difficult for me to process things, but through therapy, you know, like OT and physical therapy, that helped me communicate better with people and, you know, live a regular life. And when I was a child, I was put into this special school called Leech, and that school was phenomenal for my growth, physically and mentally, you know. So then, like I said, I couldn't read, but I knew the phonics of the letters, which are the sounds of the letters. And so I just, you know, taught myself how to read. So
that's incredible. That's incredible. And can you take us back? Because I think, you know, it's not often that we have an opportunity to have an open conversation like this, where you might be able to give us some insight. So when you were young, say when you were 11, right? Do you remember that pretty well?
Oh, yes.
So put us in your headspace. So how challenging is it to comprehend something versus being able to communicate something at that age?
Well, I never had trouble verbally communicating and, you know, mentally processing things. But I don't know what was wrong with me. I wasn't diagnosed with dyslexia, but I guess I couldn't. I don't know. Things just didn't stick with me when I was little. So it was difficult for me at times, but I had, through the grace of God, I had overcome that. You know what I mean? And also, what made me want to read was I wanted to be someone other than myself. In other words, okay, this is going to sound a bit dark. I didn't want to be, you know, physically handicapped. So I wanted to be other people. So the best way for me to be other people was through reading. I had, when I was little, well, I still do, I have a tremendous amount of empathy. You know, I can feel other people's pain. I can feel other people's joy. You know, and I figured this out through watching cartoons and movies. So I said to myself, if I could do this with cartoons and movies, imagine what I could do in a book. So I started reading The Long Walk at 11. And for those who don't know, The Long Walk is a very gruesome book. It's basically, how should I describe it? Well, it's a marathon walk with a group of males, and if they get tired or fall, they get shot down by a group of soldiers. So, you know, I wanted to put myself in the skin of the main character who was in the contest. And I wanted to feel his fear. I wanted to feel his joy. I wanted to feel his nausea. And I did feel all those things. And I literally could put myself inside another person's skin. So therefore, when I read, I am no longer disabled. I am a totally different person.
That is just remarkable. I've never heard anything explained quite that way. And it really helps me, and I'm sure it will our viewers as well, to be able to understand that a little bit better, of how you were able to do that. And, you know, the fact that you talk about empathy, right, is to me a true characterization of who you are at your core to be able to empathize, you know, with others, and put yourself in their position, so to speak.
Yeah, I try to do that every single time I read. As a matter of fact, that's why I like to read all the genres, even genres I'm uncomfortable with, to understand, you know, to be that person for one moment.
Yeah.
And I kid you not, sometimes I remember I was reading a book on Columbine High School, and because I wanted to understand why people can hurt that way, hurt others that way. And so the book was so well written that at one point I was literally in the body of Dylan Klebold, Eric Harris. And when I was done reading, I had to throw up because it was kind of like exercising what I've just read. I had to, like, how should I say this? It was like inhabiting, when I was reading it, it was like inhabiting a spirit inhabiting a body, almost.
Incredible. Incredible. And after, you know, after experiencing that and reading that book, what insight did you gain from that as far as how can people be this cruel? What is it? Is it mental illness? What is it?
It's a lot of it's two for me. It's two factors: mental illness and the environment that they grew up in, the pressures of their society. You know, so when I was done reading the book, I wanted to, you know, I may sound like a bleeding heart right now, but I wanted to hug those two boys, you know, but even though they're not here any longer, but I wanted to hug those two boys and I wanted to sit down with them and just talk with them, you know.
Amazing. Amazing. No, I appreciate you sharing how you're able to do this. It's a unique spin. I think, you know, most of us that read try to put ourselves in the position of characters, but again, I haven't heard it framed quite like how you do it. But Juan, take us through your process. You told us you have cerebral palsy. How are you able, physically, how are you able to get, you know, the book written? How did you do it?
I literally write with this index finger of my right hand. Okay. Now, I know there's software where I can speak into a microphone and it'll just write what I say. But there's two factors that hinder me with that. One is because of my cerebral palsy, my voice is unstable. Sometimes it goes high, sometimes it goes low. And so when I write, when I speak into the software, it has all this nonsense on the document. And so another part of it is my mind. It hinders my mind. Like, when I write slowly, I'm building a world. And so when I speak it, the world kind of pauses when it's being built for some reason, which is very weird. Like, okay, I'm going to share this with, I never shared this with anybody. When a person writes, they're creating a world. Okay, when you hear the tap tap of the keys, that's the sound of a human creating. It's almost godly, like, in a way, because you're creating a human being. You know, when you hear the tap tap, you know, of the keys, you know, that's okay, one brick being placed down into your world that you created.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. And to think that you use one finger to be able to do this is just remarkable. Now, what, you know, I write like you, right? So I'm very familiar with writing, but many times I have to go back and rewrite a sentence, or, you know, are you doing that as well? Are you making corrections as you go, or do you write it through and then go back?
I write it and then go back, like you said, because I'll read the sentence and then I'm like, no, that didn't sound right. I can make it fancier, or I can make it more plain. Sometimes during a sentence, I will get so deep within the setting and the character that I have to stop myself, because sometimes the scene gets so intense that it takes so much out of me. You have to understand that when I write, I'm putting myself in the book. In other words, what you are getting in my book, and this isn't hyperbole, I swear to you, this is true. What you are getting are my thoughts, my heart, my soul is trapped within those pages.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so wonderful to hear. Now, let's talk about your first book here is poetry. Do you have experience writing poetry? Was this your first, endeavor with poetry? How long have you been writing it?
I've been writing poetry since I was 12. Since 1997. Wow. And, you know, it was weird because, you know, 12 was the age when I, you know, started going through puberty. So as soon as the hormones kicked in, that's when poetry awakened. It was like in a slumber, you know what I mean? At the time, I had no idea that my grandfather and my father were poets.
Wow.
And nobody ever told me that until one day, you know, I'm writing at my desk, and I had this old Smith Corona that my dad had bought at a pawn shop. And so I was writing poetry. He says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm writing a poem." And my dad's eyes just get wide. I was like, "Oh my God, you inherited our love for words." I did not know that. I was like, "What are you talking about?" So then he went through this whole thing how on my grandfather's side, there's a huge amount of poets. And it was just weird.
I mean, I'm sure that must have made you feel amazing at that time as a 12-year-old.
Well, at the time, I was so ignorant. I didn't know how to make it. I didn't know what to make of it. You know, I was just like, you know, oh, cool. But now, as an adult, I can appreciate that.
And Juan, would you say writing has been a, I know you talked about reading, But let's switch now to the writing side. Has that been a positive outlet for you as far as, you know, almost in a way therapeutic to be able to release what's inside?
Oh, yes. Better than therapy. And I'm not knocking, you know, the psychological profession in any way, but writing any type of art is way better than therapy. It's just you and that blank page or that canvas, and you just tell it whatever you want. And it becomes a mirror. And then if you see that ugliness you in that mirror, you examine it and you say to yourself, why is this so ugly? What happened? You know, and so by doing that, you can probably, you know, help yourself. But I'm just talking from my own experience. You know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to down the psychological profession in any way. But writing to me is way better than hearing a person say to you, I feel your pain. You know, literally, those words that you write, that paint that you slash on the canvas, literally, they are 10 times better than a person saying, I feel your pain, because that art literally feels your pain.
Wow, that's awesome. That is great. Now, you mentioned to me before the interview when we spoke a couple of weeks ago that you're now working on your second book.
Well, actually, it's in the process of being edited now with fantastic editors. Shout out to Ava. Oh, my God. She is fantastic. You know, and Roger Harvey, oh my God, he's such a fantastic individual. You know, he does the cover art, and for that book, for Little Bits of Blue, I told him what I wanted, and within 24 hours, he actually made that, and he says, "Well, here's a mock-up. If you don't like it, we'll go back to the drawing board." And he showed it to me. I said, no, man, that's fantastic. You know,
that's awesome. He captured what you were hoping to see.
Yes. And so, you know, working with the editors and working with everybody at American Reel was a fantastic experience. And excuse me, it was a fantastic experience. And also, you know, I, whenever I can, because I see your ads on Facebook all the time, that's how I found you guys. And so whenever I can, I try to comment on your ads and, you know, tell people my experience, you know, because, you know, there are a lot of turkeys out there, and you guys aren't those turkeys. You know, you guys are for real, you know. Yeah, it's even in your name, okay? So
we appreciate that. Thank you so much. But tell us about your second book. How does it differ from the first one? Would it give us an overview, if you don't mind?
Well, the second book is called The Wild West. Now, it has nothing to do with cowboys or Native Americans, but it has everything to do from where I grew up, the area I grew up in. I grew up in the inner city. I saw a lot of it. I saw and heard a lot of, you know, bad things. But I decided not to partake in those things. And I could have, you know, despite my disability, I'm quite mobile and I could have participated in many of those things, but I chose not to. I chose to go the education route, which, you know, I was mocked by others. But I would always say to myself, you know, there's a better world out there. But, okay, despite some of those people that I knew that were doing bad things, I could always see, you know, this is kind of weird. I could always see their beauty, you know? But yet they were, to society, they were bad people, but not to me, because I knew them as kids.
Right.
You know? And I always, when I always write about that neighborhood, that place in the city, which is West Side, Wilmington, Delaware. Because, again, you know, not, this isn't hyperbole, but that place is etched in my heart. It's etched in my soul. It's who I am, you know. But I just chose to go another route, you know. I, you know, while some of my peers were doing other things, I was, you know, reading Dostoevsky. I was reading, you know, The Three Musketeers, Alexandre Dumas, you know, because, again, I did not want to be in that physical world. So I escaped through my books. And I escaped through my books. And, you know, they were my sanctuary. In other words, what was going on around me did not affect me, you know, because of those books.
And so did you've taken this theme of how you grew up in the inner city. And is this the setting of this new book? Is it a book of fiction?
Yes, it's a book of fiction. Like Stephen King, where most of his books take place in Maine. Most of my books take place in that area. Most of the people who read my books will often comment, "Hey, I grew up a block away from your main character," which is totally surreal to me, you know.
That's awesome.
You know, the setting's real, you know. You know, the essence of the setting is real. People that have read my books have literally said, you know, I know that place. I stood on that corner. I had my first kiss right there where you described, you know. And that to me is just awesome because, you know, it goes back to the empathy that I talked to you about. You know, also when I was a kid, I used to hang around a lot of elderly folk, of all creeds, you know, Latino, African Americans, Jewish, Italian folks, and every single elderly person had tremendous stories. If you have time, sit with an elderly person, and they will tell you these tremendous tales from their lives. It's like when they speak, it's like a piece of their soul is literally falling out their mouth and, you know, making their way into your heart.
I could totally relate to that one. In the neighborhood that I grew up was mainly Slovak immigrants, and they would all sit on their porch in the summertime. And often we would just go and you know, my sister and I or neighbors just sit on the porch with them, and they would tell the stories. And those stories have remained with me to this day. So I 100% agree with you. And I think the diversity of the neighborhood that you were in, I could just, you know, I could just visualize it. You growing up as a child and being able to be a part of that, as a lot of wisdom is shared through those stories.
And I remember I had this neighbor. She was an elderly African American woman. Her name was Miss Jeanette, and she since died. This was 30 years ago, but she told me she shared with me she grew up during the Jim Crow South, in I believe Georgia, and she said. She was thirsty, okay, and so she passed a whites only fountain, and she said she didn't stick her mouth on it, but what she did was she put pressure on the valve, and then an arc of water just came out like sort of like a rainbow, and like she drank that way. From the white fountain, and she said, "Wine, I felt so devilish," and she just starts laughing her butt off.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, no, it's those stories, right, that really help us as individuals see who others are. Yep. And to me, story is that's, you know, that is the theme of our podcast. Everyone has a story. So the fact that you brought that up, you know, I really appreciate your insight on that. Okay, so when is this next book projected to come out? I know you said it's in editing. You think you're about a month or two away?
I would say, either spring or early summer. I have an appointment on Monday for my actual cover design. I'm
Great.
excited about that.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So, yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the length of this book, the number of words?
It is 50,000 words.
50,000 words.
I was talking to Tara Monaco recently, and she told me that the book was 211 pages.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Juan, I'm just curious, how, when you finish that book, 50,000 words, number one, how did you feel? And number two, how did you know it was finished? A lot of people ask that. How do you know when a book is done? So I'm just curious.
Well, to me, okay, it feels great. I have a little celebration ritual, which is weird. When I finish a book, I listen to Bach, I listen to classical music, and I listen to also this piece called Clair de Lune. Which is, I forget who wrote it, but it is so beautiful. It is so peaceful. Anyway, I'm getting a bit off topic, but when you're done a book, when you finish a book, when your soul is done talking to you, when you no longer hear your characters' voices in your head. I don't know how weird that sounds.
Oh, it's awesome. I can relate because I also write fiction, and I totally know what you mean. But for those who have never written a book, I'm really happy that you explained it that way. So a couple more questions. I appreciate all your time here today. You must have really good support from your family, I'm assuming.
Yes, I do. My father, of course, who comes from a, you know, literary background, and my mother, doesn't speak that well. You know, she speaks mostly Spanish, and sometimes I have to read to her when I write, and sometimes she's like mesmerized when I write. Mind you, I will say this, I myself don't find my words powerful, you know, because I wrote them, they're not powerful to me, you know, but
to others they are.
You know, I forgot to say, acting and writing go hand in hand. To me, see, I wanted to, before I could read, I wanted to be an actor, you know? And so it dawned on me, this is, I'm going to get typecast as the disabled dude in every movie. So, you know, but there's something with words, taking something from a script and adding flesh to the words, adding a body to the words, you know, and then the words on the script become a soul, you know.
If you don't mind, Juan, I'd like to read one of your poems, and if you could help us just dissect it a little bit.
Okay.
I picked The Strength Given. I still carry her essence upon my lips. No longer are they blushing pilgrims, foreign to a new land. No, they belong to a warrior who is armored with love that carries me throughout the day, with the knowledge that my scarred heart is smiling.
Well, you know, I wrote that when I was 15, and wrote that when I was in 10th grade, and I'm not going to mention her name, but I had a secret love affair with this young lady. Because of my disability, you know, people would mock the girls I would have crushes on. And so with this young lady, nobody knew that we were in a relationship, so our relationship was secret. And so she gave me my first kiss, and that is my first kiss in poetry form.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that with us. Incredible. And I hope she's watching.
I hope not.
Well, you didn't say her name, so we're clear.
Yeah, she's married now, so.
Okay. You were kids, so everything's good. Talk about any of your future plans. What are you hoping to yet accomplish? Where are you going next?
Well, I don't have lofty plans, but I've, you know, hopefully I will reach more people. That's my goal, to reach more people. And hopefully I'm able to normalize disability in a way where people don't find things as incredible. I have this poetry in there, this poem, excuse me, I had this poem in that book that you just read. It's called Death to Tiny Tim. And I'm actually cursing Tiny Tim because people have this image of, you know, people have this saintly image of people with disabilities, which is what Tiny Tim represents. And I'm actually cursing that image, you know. And, you know, my goal is to normalize disability all across the board. You know what I mean? So that's my goal. I don't care if my books ever make it to a movie. I don't care. I just want to reach people. You know, it's all about the people. And, you know, I always say to people, if you go into writing to make money or to seek fame, then, you know, that is not being a writer. Being a writer is connecting with people. You know, it's not seeking the glory or the fame.
I couldn't have said that any better myself, Juan. It is so true. We talk to a lot of authors all the time. And you'd be surprised the number of those who, you know, when we ask, you know, what are your goals? What are you trying to do? And they say, I want to become famous from it, or I want to make a lot of money. And when they say that, you know, it's typically not the best fit for us because of those reasons. So really happy that you pointed that out. Awesome. Well, look, this has been a very insightful, enlightening, entertaining, and also sober conversation. I really thank you so much for your time. I would love to have you back after your second book comes out so we could talk about that. But before I let you go, Juan, I try to ask a lot of our guests this, and you're still very young. You have a lot of life to live. But at the end of the day, what do you want your legacy to be?
Well, that's a big one. Well, what I want my legacy to be is somebody that just wanted to be heard. It's simple, you know, just because, like I mentioned before, the human voice is the sound of the soul, and everybody wants their soul to be heard.
Isn't that the truth? Juan Diaz, thank you so much for coming on the show. Welcome to the American Real Family.
Thank you.
Best of luck in all your endeavors and all that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to American Real. For more stories like this one, be sure to stop by AmericanReal.tv. Follow us on all social media to stay up to date with everything American Real. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and contact one of our publishing experts if you're ready to publish your book and become a best-selling author.